Hello, everybody. I just closed the doors myself. Welcome to the session this afternoon. This session is called How Scrums and Sprints Can Support the Strategically Focused Actuarial Function. So welcome today. I think many of you might be starting to see some of these techniques used within your organizations, maybe less so within actuarial teams, but it's a very, very interesting thing to see, especially with the number of strategic projects hitting actuarial functions these days. Let me introduce the speakers to you. Firstly, Darren Robinson, who most of you would know. He is currently the Chief Actuary for MLC Limited. Prior to that, he was at BTFG, at Clearview, at Common Shore, so he's had a long history in life insurance. Darren, as I said, works at MLC. You would know that there's many strategic projects hitting his team and himself because of the Nippon transaction over the last 2 or 3 years. So he's here to share some of the insights and some of the techniques and agile techniques that has been used inside the actuarial function. I'd like to introduce also Maria Muir. She is a partner in Deloitte's Consulting Performance Automate practice. She specializes in program project delivery optimization, enterprise agility, accelerated transformations enabled by agile frameworks. So she's here to give us some 101 on Agile, where it's needed, and then also introduce the pros and cons and the benefits you can get from using Agile within actuarial functions. She's an Agile leader within Deloitte, and she represents a team of experts in Scrum, Lean, Kanban, many of these things I've never heard of, actually, scaled Agile frameworks and continuous delivery. And she has extensive experience focused on Agile IT transformations, program delivery, business intelligence, and data warehousing. Before we start, and I will introduce the speakers, starting with Maria, I'd just like to remind you at the very end, we'll have the speakers, we'll have a Q&A session. Please come up and introduce yourself. This session is being recorded. Introduce your name and company and the question. Thank you. And Maria.
So, to get things, I guess, kicked off between Darren and myself today, the topics that we are going to cover are: what is Agile? What are some of the key concepts and practices? When should you use it? Darren will walk us through a real-life example from within his own team. We'll then tie it back up with, so what's the so what? So the benefits to your customers and to your teams, and then how do you get started? So I think we should have probably about 15, 20 minutes, I'm hoping, for some questions. So if you've got a burning one, either if you want and it's quick, ask it as we go, or we will kind of hold them at the end. But hopefully we can have a bit of an interactive session as we go through today. So to kick things off, I thought I would start with telling you a bit of a story as to the origins of Agile if you haven't heard it yet. So basically where it started and where it became popular was in the early 2000s when a bunch of IT software professionals got together at a ski lodge in the US, and they basically had a whinge over how their long-running programs were costing them too much, taking too long to deliver when they actually were delivered, business outcomes were actually not met. It was making them miserable, it was making their teams miserable. So at the end of their ski lodge whinge powwow fest, they came up with this concept called Agile. So Agile is really a set of iterative and incremental frameworks where you very fundamentally put the customer at the heart of everything. You have a team that's cross-functional, that has all the skills required to actually deliver those outcomes, and you're then able to realize value on a regular basis, and that's the whole point. One of the key things that the IT dudes came up with was that they were very mindful. They didn't necessarily want to come up with another set prescribed methodology because that's what they had been experiencing in the past. And so what they very much focused on was a set of mindset and principles that would define a way of working to help remediate the problems that they were seeing. So that's what then leads me to the Agile Manifesto, which is really quite simply a set of core four values. And just maybe a quick raise of hands. Has anyone seen this before? Heard of this before? No. Okay. Well, that's good. And at least I'll then be able to give you that overview here. So basically, in terms of this manifesto, it is grounded in these four core values of individuals and interactions, customer and business outcomes, customer collaboration, and responding to change. So quite simply, it's all the things on the left is what's priority and what's focused on, not necessarily the things on the right. So that's not to say that they're not important or you don't do them. It's just the emphasis is what is on the things on the left. So for example, rather than following perhaps a detailed process and relying on a tool, the emphasis here in terms of taking a problem or an idea is actually through team collaboration and discussion. Another example would be when you come up with a design of a model, rather than writing it down before you actually get started, the key idea here is to actually get started with building that model to then be able to test it, to actually then be able to see whether or not you're achieving the business outcome that you're looking for and getting that feedback. That's fundamentally at the core of this framework. So because Agile is iterative and incremental, it is a bit different from traditional mindset or traditional approach. So this diagram starts to help us unpick that a little bit. So from a traditional perspective, perhaps what you might do is actually spend all your time up front analyzing the customer problem or the business idea that you've got in the nth amount of detail. You then go and design how you would approach that, or the solution that you need to build or the model that you need to put together. You then go and build it. You then go and test it, and only until the very end of that very sequential process, where you probably have a couple of handoff points between individuals in the team or different teams, do you then finally get an outcome at the end. From an Agile perspective, the whole intent here is to actually get value outcomes iteratively as you go. So this is where sprints come into place, and the build, learn, and measure feedback loop is actually quite important, because what it recognizes is that perhaps you don't actually know the full extent of the problem up front before you get started, or you don't know what all the requirements are that you actually need to build whatever model or outcome that you're trying to get to. But the whole intent here is actually to get feedback to then iteratively build upon that. So at each point here, at the end of each sprint, you're actually getting some value. So what is I think a lot of myths have come up over the last number of years. So we've just covered, I guess, what Agile is in terms of what Agile is not. I think there is a preconception that because it was driven from an IT software perspective, and that's kind of where it's, you know, gained its popularity, that it only applies to that context. Well, it's actually just a way of working. So in terms of how you think about the problem, how you structure the problem, how you then prioritize the work that you then need to get done to solve that, how you work with the team, and how you get things done is fundamentally what Agile is. So that means you can apply it to an actuarial context, to a business context as well, not just an IT one. I think one of the other things is that it's usually applied from an IT projects perspective, and so I think there's been some preconceptions or myths that it doesn't work in a BAU operations context either. I think this is where you need to look at how you apply Agile to the context and tailor it, because the one-size-fits-all definitely doesn't work, because it's not a silver bullet to solve all your challenges either. One of the other, I guess, excuses that I've typically seen is that just because you're following an Agile approach means that you don't need to do any scope management or planning or design or documentation, just because with those core values we said that we were focusing on the left as opposed to on the right. That's absolutely not the case either. So I think you still need to do a plan, you still need to do a design. It's just how much of that you're doing up front to then get a high-level vision before you actually get started is perhaps the difference from a traditional perspective from an Agile one. Has anyone heard of these myths before? Oh yeah, heads nodding. Okay, great. Which ones, out of curiosity? Or ones that maybe you have, or preconceptions you have yourself?
Documentation.
Yep. Yep. Which is not true. It's you just document what you need to.
I'm curious about the type one. What's the misconception?
So the misconception there is that a lot of the time, because it can feel very unstructured, or that because you don't know, you know, all the things, all the steps that you need to follow before you actually start there. I think sometimes there's that preconception that it's actually a leap of faith, where actually it's not, because you know the high level as to where you're getting to, and that's what you're committing to, and then the commitment to the next sprint or the next immediate things that need to happen is what you are committing. So it's actually not faith, it's understood. So I guess with that context in mind, if we can then I guess talk about the nuts and bolts of what sprints and scrums mean. So in terms of Agile, it's very much, quite simply, three key artifacts, five key meetings, and three key roles. So I guess starting off first with a lot of collaboration with your business or with your customer to actually understand what is the problem that you're trying to solve, you then come up with the things that you need to do. So what is it that they're actually asking you to come up with? And that starts to form, or that forms, rather, your product backlog. You then take a prioritization lens on this, so very much from that value perspective, and then the team picks up those highest value things and actually starts working on them in a time box sprint, which can be 2 weeks, which can be 4 weeks, and basically the whole orientation there is to actually deliver a working outcome in that period of time. So once you go through into that sprint, techniques like a daily stand-up, which I'm sure perhaps some of you have heard before, which is a short and sharp 15 minutes every day that the team gets together, that this really creates focus, it raises immediate issues and risks, and it creates an opportunity for teaming. So that's kind of how you go through the 2 weeks, and at the end of the sprint, you actually come up with something that's working. And with that working outcome or that working something, you then get feedback from your business or your customer to then actually understand, did you meet what they said that you were supposed to build, and then actually get feedback for the next iteration. So it's very much that two-way feedback loop. So that's at the sprint review. The retrospective, that's when the team gets together and actually looks at how did the team go about working together in that 2 weeks? What's the opportunity here for continuous improvement? And so at the end of that, this cycle then continues again. So it's very much founded in the team. So the Scrum Master here, it's a bit of a different title for a role, but basically the Scrum Master is the guardian of the team who creates an empowerment for the team, removes the blockers, and it's very unlike a traditional kind of project manager or perhaps a team lead, because the skills and what you're doing there from an enablement perspective are a bit different. It also relies on a product owner. So this is someone from perhaps the business who understands truly what the customer is looking at, who's then empowered to be able to provide you that input, make decisions as to the outcome that you're trying to achieve, have you actually met it or not, and is actually embedded within the team day to day to then be able to make those calls. And then, of course, you've got the team, which is a cross-functional mix of people who are there to get the job done. So far, so good. It's a bit of a whiz through, but those are the high-level basics. So I think the thing to consider here is that Agile, you need to think of it as a one-size-doesn't-fit-all. So, and there are going to be some situations where you actually wouldn't or would decide not to use it. So in the sense, or in the case of, if you look at this graph here, if you've got agreement on what it is that you're actually going to do and a high level of certainty, you wouldn't necessarily want to put the sprint or the scrum kind of structure from a team perspective onto this. Because if you know what it is that you need to do and it's actually quite clear, then just go and do it. I think in the case of if it's a lot of uncertainty, and you actually need to get agreement, so maybe things are going to need to be flexible, things are going to need to respond to change, you need to iterate. Those are the magic words of when Agile fits. So kind of in that light blue box where it's complicated and complex, that's where Agile truly gets its benefit from. And obviously in the blue, the top blue there, there I think you've got some more things to sort through because there's some anarchy that might be there. So don't apply anything in that context. So I would probably venture to say that some of the things, maybe majority of the things that you guys work to or work on day to day, maybe they sit in that complicated, complex space. And so this is where kind of using agile ways of working, or at least that mindset, might be able to help you. So to put that all into context, Darren's going to talk through a real life example in his actuarial function.
Thanks, Maria. So within the MLC actuarial team is the MI team for MLC. And we adopted this agile approach 6 months ago. I actually didn't know Maria 6 months ago, and so if there's any similarities between these two, it's a coincidence. Today I'm going to talk you through the journey that we went through, the learnings that we had, what went well, what didn't go so well. To provide some background, the MI team provided sales information, retention information, claims information to the business. It provided expected numbers, and so we used these tools for our experience investigation. Systems were heavily used by the distribution team, by our retention team, and the claims team. There were a lot of users. We had, at the moment, we have 300 users, and the database gets accessed 100 times a day. So you can imagine there's a lot of demand for this team's time. The request to change actually came from the team itself. They all said that they wanted to adopt an agile approach, but speaking to each one of them, they had a slightly different view of what that actually meant. So we held a number of workshops, which are summarised on this page here, which basically boiled down to they wanted to implement best practices, they wanted to improve the quality of what they were doing. It was a high quality, but they had higher standards. They wanted to improve their planning, and they were also very keen to increase upskilling, particularly for our junior members. So that's what they wanted, and that's what we've tried to capture there on those two boards. These are two boards that we made up, and we've stuck up on the wall. So a big part of this change was actually the people side more than the technical side and helping the teams collaborate. So these posters help with that type of thing. So getting ready, we hired a professional coach. His name was Wen. He had a minion as an icon, so you can see him there in the middle with all the sayings that he used to say to us ongoing. He adopted a fairly gradual approach. So we didn't implement all of the things that Maria was talking about straight away. We implemented them gradually, and there's various tools that you can use for this. And what Wen did was ran those tools for us. So the team didn't need to learn how to use the tools, they just needed to get the concepts initially, and then over time there was a handover from Wen to the team. So the first thing that we did was introduce Kanban boards, which I'll show you what they look like on the next slide. We made a list of all of the jobs that the team was working on. We called that our backlog. And after a period of time, we also introduced two-week sprints, which is what Maria was talking about. So these are the key elements that we introduced. The first on the left-hand side is a Kanban board, which is just a visual representation of all the work we're doing. And if you start off with a job, it starts on the left-hand side, and as it progresses through being built, being tested, being customer tested, it moves from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. So it creates a sense of movement and progress, which is great for the team. On the right-hand side is the actuarial team in action in their daily stand-up. So the daily stand-up is a 10-minute conversation that they have each day just to say what they're doing, what they're planning to do today, what they did yesterday, any blockages, any obstacles that they've got. So the team quickly gets together, talk about what they are doing, and that actually created a lot of cross-pollination of ideas. And it helps the team focus on what the whole team is focusing on rather than individually. We use something called user stories, which are basically defining what needs to be done from the perspective of the customer. So at the end of doing this particular piece of work, the customer will see this differently. And maybe this is why they want to see that. Which was an important change. We introduced two-week sprints. So the way this worked was they had a planning session up front. In the planning session, they talked about what they were doing and checked that they had that particular job defined well enough to actually implement it, for the coder to implement it. So it starts with that planning session. They actually agree what they want to achieve in the next 2 weeks, so it's quite clear. If there are new things that need to come in, it's actually quite a negotiation, and we actually tried not to let things come into that two-week sprint so the team could continue to focus on what they were doing. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, they had what they called a retrospective session. And in that was a couple of hours to talk about what went well and what didn't go too well. So it's quite an investment. We're spending 2 hours every couple of weeks to talk about that, which is very important. It just gives the team an opportunity to reflect on what is going well, what isn't, what they could improve, and sort of gives permission for that type of thinking, which you don't always get. Another thing that we introduced was pairing. So there is a backlog, and when someone finishes their job, they go to the backlog, pick the top thing off, the highest priority thing, and then they start working on that. And they have to work on that regardless of whether they know how to do it, which is great, because it means they then need to go and sit with whoever does know how to do it, and you sort of get this randomised cross-pollination of ideas over time. That went down really well, particularly with the junior guys. The results. Some of the challenges was actually creating the backlog. So we actually had, there was about 200 things that the team was working on, and it took some time to figure out all of the things that they were working on. And that was actually part of the issue, that there was quite a lot of distraction. So that was one issue, actually making up the backlog. And the second was having multiple stakeholders. So we were working with the distribution team, the retention team, the claims team, and the rest of the actuarial team as well. And so there were multiple priorities, and what this did was made it quite explicit what our priorities were. And, of course, not everyone was up at the top of the list, and so we needed to spend some time with our customers explaining why we were prioritising the way we were. In terms of the benefit... benefits, the team engagement jumped up quite a lot. So a lot of these techniques actually significantly increased the amount of communication. So the daily stand-up, so what we had previously was a team of quite brilliant individuals, but they were individuals. And the daily stand-up and the sprints, talking about what we're going to achieve as a team, and the pairing all helped increase the communication. So there's a lot more talking than there was previously. It's quite a noisy actuarial team now, which is good. So that's one thing. Cross-training increased quite a lot. That came through particularly with the junior members. They felt they learnt a lot over this last 6 months. And the other one was priorities being set by the team based on what the company needed, rather than what was occurring previously was priorities were being basically based on personal relationships. So if someone needed something and they knew someone in the team, they're going to talk to that person and they'd get it done. And they were helpful people, so that's how we used to do it. But it just meant that the more valuable priorities weren't getting the attention that they should have. Okay. So these are some of the things that they've said, but we've got a video, so I'll skip straight over to that.
Let's hear from some of the members of the actuarial information team on their experience.
So in the last 20 years as a consultant in IT, this is the biggest productivity uplift since we started the Kanban Scrum approach that I've seen in my career. We're at least two to two and a half times more productive. People are not working in silos, they're working together. It is a really amazing improvement.
So there's a lot more transparency. We can see what everyone's working on. We focus on delivering the value of the business, so we're working on the right things, and we get that to the business quicker. And we don't rest on our laurels. We have retros, which we review what we did in the past 2 weeks, adjust what didn't work, drop that, and we introduce new things that make us better and overall, work more efficiently.
As a junior member, I feel by applying agile approach actually it helps me learning quite a lot in the most recent 6 months than a normal 2 years learning process.
So I don't know if you caught that last thing from Bruce, but what he was saying was in the last 6 months he'd learnt more than he'd learnt in the previous 3 years. And that's critical for our team. So we asked them, out of all the things that we could improve as a team, that was the most important. So we want to learn more. That's what's valuable to the team at the moment, and also increase business engagement. So it's great to see that. lessons and recommendations. So, a couple of points. One, the visual board and the daily stand-ups really changed the dynamics of the team, moved them from being individuals to a team. Pairing was a great way to train. So it seems like actually quite a intensive, costly way to do training, but it works really well. Just get the two guys talking together until they've solved whatever they needed to solve. And retrospectives, because they gave permission to the team to take the time. Other things, there's... I've got it in bold there, so don't be too strict. There's a lot of different parts to Agile, and some trainers can be very prescriptive in the way that they do it. We were lucky, the guy that we had when wasn't, and he brought in different elements as the team needed it. Use what works for your team, I guess is the takeout from that. It's important to take stakeholders through the journey. I didn't need to take my team through that journey because they were pushing for that, but that's probably another learning. You want to explain why you're doing it and what you're doing. And we got a lot of value from having a quality coach as well. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. So I guess just to, because I'm just conscious that we want to make sure that we've got a bit of time for discussion. So just to kind of maybe wrap it up with a bit of an overview that you heard with the nuts and bolts of sprints and scrums, the practical example with the learnings from Darren's team. In terms of the benefits, so the so what, I think Darren talked through a lot of the improved team productivity, and that was through communication, through pairing, through the stand-ups and whatnot, as well as the retrospectives, that's actually the start of the focus. As teams, and in my experience with a few different teams in a few different contexts, as Agile starts to become more ingrained in the team and actually starts to mature, you actually start to move up this curve from a benefit perspective. So if it's all about getting outcomes to your customers faster then, or to the business, the speed increases. You clearly do have that focus on business and customer outcomes as well, and that's kind of forced through as a starting point from a prioritized backlog or the to-do list that you've got for the team. There is a reduction in handoffs, so because you actually have a cross-functional team that has all the skills needed to do things together, you actually don't need to pass one thing to the next. And so there, that's the starting point, and I guess as teams mature, it's then increasing that accountability and empowerment to actually make decisions, whether they're strategic, maybe they're risk-based, those kinds of things as well helps to reduce those handoffs. Cost is can be an element as well, and of course Darren mentioned that it actually made people happy. So I'm a firm believer of happy people, higher productivity, better outcomes. So this is where actually then becoming being able to win the war on talent, because I'm sure that you're all facing this. I know that I am at the moment. Being able to be in a good position of having a good team and attractive workplace is one of the key benefits as well. So lastly, before we open it up to a bit of a question to all of you, you're probably thinking, okay, well, I understand maybe it a little bit more. I've understood how to do it, or maybe some ideas that I can take to my team tomorrow. But how do I actually, you know, get started? So the whole idea of actually going on an agile change journey is to do is exactly what we said in terms of taking small, incremental, and iterative steps. It's not about a big bang change. So I think to echo Darren's point, it's about you have to understand, I guess, what's in the kit bag of tools, of practices, of things that you can use, and very much ground that with the strategic priorities that you've got, the pain points or the problems that you've got of today, and be able to marry the two. And so in my experience, I've seen that individual teams, so maybe a collection of 10 people more or less, it can actually take at least 3 months to kind of get the whole concept of this way of working cemented, or even as long as 6 months until the team's really comfortable to then be able to operate in this way autonomously. And so obviously you then kind of scale up that change journey as you start to get bigger with more teams and you're operating a little bit more like a business unit or more of a portfolio of teams as well. So the typical journey that people normally go on, and Darren had mentioned that in his case he didn't actually need to convince the team because the team came to him with this, but actually it takes a bit of time to help the team if you actually start to want to adopt these ways of working. Because the first question that I guarantee that maybe some of your team members will ask you is, why do I have to do it different? I've always done it this way. What's in it for me? And so really putting together a case for change that is then grounded in those strategic priorities as well as the pain points, so that people can understand kind of where it is that you're going to and how this is going to help them right away, is actually quite important, and that takes a bit of time. So once you've actually got the agreement from everybody that this is a good idea, then the questions of, well, what do I do now? Now that you've told me, am I doing it right? From a leader perspective, do I still have the same amount of control? Am I giving up some power? Is there some risk here that I'm now, you know, letting to come in? So those are the types of things that need to be worked through. And then from a team perspective, what does it actually mean for my career? Because I think if you take from an agile perspective all the way to the full end of the spectrum, whether you decide to go there or not, it's typically more generalist or cross-functional people. So in terms of then being able to manage the balance of what does that mean from a career perspective, start to be some other questions as well, and how do you then incent and reward people too? So that's kind of once you've made a couple of steps down the ways of working would be the questions that you would start to get. So our question to you is, how would you use Agile in your teams? Maybe not tomorrow, because you're still in the conference tomorrow. Maybe the next day. Any ideas? Excuse me.
Hi, I'm Mark Schneider from Solvexia. I've known Darren for a long time, and I think this is an amazing approach. We've practiced it for a long time. We had an extra complication, which was not all our team members were co-located. Some worked from home on certain days, some were located in other countries. But the methodology still works. You just need to adapt it to use certain tools. Mm-hmm. So instead of a Kanban board, we use a tool called Trello, mm-hmm. which looks very similar, and you can move things around. And we also use Skype for things like the stand-ups, and it still works equally as well. So it is readily adapted to when you don't have everybody in the same location. And I think the productivity comes just from being able to generate ideas from a wider group. So back to the plenary session earlier, multiple heads and a diverse group is better than one. This is a good example of that, where bringing people together and the ideas and diversity of opinion, this methodology encourages that. So strongly supportive of it.
Good to hear. Thank you. I think you raise a good point just in terms of the other tools that are there. So there are lots of tools like Trello or Jira or Rally or those types of things that help, especially when you're not just not in the same location, but when you're scaling multiple teams, that starts to help, so that it's not just on the wall, it's somewhere else that can be accessed. And then collaboration tools. So mimicking as much as possible the face-to-face, which is through video, I think is really important, because that's where you truly get the trust and empowerment with the team as well. I don't know if you had anything else to add.
We actually did have one team member. We're based in Sydney, and we had one team member based in Melbourne. And so we had to deal with those things as well. And so we had the physical board, but we had a replica of that in another tool that we used. And so she could see that. And there was a little reminder on this Kanban board, if I can find that for you, with actually Anna. So down the bottom here, you can see Anna's face saying, make sure you update the Jira board so that I know what's going on.
Any other questions, comments, thoughts?
Hi, Andrew Myrams from NIB. I work in a fairly small team. Is there a sort of minimum size or number of people that you'd want to be able to take this approach, or does it sort of work all the time?
So I think no smaller than three, just because with the rituals, so with the daily stand-up, the sprint review, the retros, I think because you're so small a team anyway, you probably have a lot of collaboration if you're all sitting hopefully next to each other. anyway, that you don't necessarily need to apply that structure. So I think the rough rule of thumb is no less than 3, no more than 10.
Douglas Sales, Platinum Asset Management. I was just wondering how it changes your view on recruitment, given you now have a new, I guess, a new format of working. Does it change the kind of person you look for to bring into the team?
It was really interesting watching how the team did change from, working by themselves, and socially they would talk to each other, so it wasn't completely introvert environment, but there was a lot more discussion around what the job was. These were very technical roles, and so the primary thing we look for is the particular skill set, but obviously with that and having watched the team, there were some that really stood out, and there's a particular role called the Scrum Master, and that Scrum Master coordinates the sprint. And so there were, and you could tell, there were some people that were better at that than others, and so you might look for people with those skills that can, bring the team together and draw out the different people.
And I should say, I was there with Darren when we went on this recruitment drive, and even before Darren brought in the Scrum Master, because of the nature of change happening in MLC, when we did recruit people, we were actually testing how comfortable they were with change, and that was a constant question. So obviously once they came on board, then Agile being behind it, that just supported their style of working. But that Scrum Master does require a particular style. So, I don't know if that team could have been as successful without you bringing in that Scrum Master, because it's a really different way of working, especially for actuaries or programmers in this instance.
Yeah, that's right. It is very different. And change is hard for people. They get used to doing it a particular way, and so having the change, it took us 4 months. And even after the 4 months, we had Wen came in, and he was actually this Scrum Master for a large part of that time. And so by the time he left, we had to actually get each one of the team members to rotate who was his Scrum Master, which is great, brings them out a bit and forces them to confront others on certain things.
And I should say, because within an actuarial team, this is the management information team, so it's management information, lots and lots of stakeholders. So again, this is really interactive. It is focused on the stakeholders. At the time I was managing, the valuation team, the monthly reporting team. Now that process is a lot more repetitive and it's a lot more certainty. And what you could see from across the floor was this team gathering, and it was so interactive. It was so inspirational to see when that Scrum Master came. That's why I just love this technique. So I'm all for project management and things like that. But I think the way that our stakeholders are looking to actuarial functions to provide advice to them and really, really interact with them, the more we can bring this into our teams, the more value we will be to the business. We'll be able to prove our value so much better.
So the next thing, I've got another team that does the valuation process, and at the start of the month they do the valuation, and it's very structured. It almost needs to be like a factory. You get the inputs and you get an output, and it needs to be right, it needs to be reliable, and it needs to be done on time, and so it's not really suitable for this. But then the second half of the month, they spend time analysing, spend time improving, spend time talking to customers, and so there's a lot more ad hoc work in that second half. And so one of the things we're going to try is using these techniques for half of the month, see what happens there, and a structured approach for the first half.
I have noticed a lot more of these techniques used within organisations having come back to Deloitte in the last 8 months. So I was hoping maybe some people could share from the floor some of your experiences using aspects of this. Or, alternatively, the other question is, I think with our actuarial team members, like I say, there's a particular style of working. This can be actually quite challenging for a lot of our team members. They don't want to stand up. They don't necessarily want to interact some of these people. So do you think, introducing these sort of things for our strategic projects, anything that has high amount of stakeholder engagement would be quite difficult to do, and maybe discuss some of the challenges from that?
I
know it's been adopted in some of the large banks, the big four banks, including in areas like finance, and I believe some of them company-wide. So it's definitely being adopted quite widely, more than one might think.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Darren and Maria, for sharing this. And hopefully you can think about it when you get back to your offices, because this is going to have to come from the top, obviously. You have to actually be encouraging your teams to be using some of these techniques. So good luck with it, and thank you very much for your presentation.
Thanks, Frank.